Hello and welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. And good morning to Mayor Tony Harp.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Good. Nice to see you. You always make New Haven tick and the studio here. You're here in the studio for your regular Mayor Monday checkup on what you and we are up to in New Haven. In case you didn't know, I was giving you the 411. You can join the conversation by posting a question on our New Haven Independent Facebook Live page or calling in to 203-872-7ELM, 203-872-7356. Our fearless leader, Larry Drost, our station manager, is off on a well-deserved vacation in South Carolina this week. And Brian Slattery, one of the founders of this radio station, is filling in for him. He's going to be manning the phones, so we're going to do our best if calls come in, and we're also going to look for your comments on Facebook Live. Today's program is made possible by, in part, thanks to support from Bertram Moses, B.C., from Gateway Community College in downtown New Haven. Thanks, Gateway. Thanks, Bertram Moses. And thanks, Mayor Harp. So nice to see you.
Great seeing you.
So I thought I'd give you your daily press briefing. I know it's usually Lawrence's job, but I'm moonlighting, okay?
All right.
As you know, 50 people are dead so far this morning at a mass shooting in Las Vegas. It might be our biggest mass shooting in our... in the history of the country, is that we hearing that? Or
yes, I saw that on online earlier today. It's really unfortunate.
And so I want to read you something Chris Murphy said this morning. He issued a statement: "Nowhere but America do horrific large-scale mass shootings happen with this degree of regularity. Last night's massacre may go down as the deadliest in our nation's history, but already this year there've been more mass shootings than days in the year." Wow. "This must stop. It is positively infuriating that my colleagues in Congress are so afraid of the gun industry that they pretend there aren't public policy responses to this epidemic. There are. And the thoughts and prayers of our politicians are cruelly hollow if they are paired with continued legislative indifference. It's time for Congress to get off its ass and do something." He wrote that in an official statement. Get off your ass and do something.
He's trying to show that he's feeling urgent. Well, I think he met the little four-legged animal, right?
But I mean, he's obviously saying this is important enough that I'm going to use that kind of language to ramp it up. But
he's right.
And the other thing he did was, you know, other politicians are a little more cautious, including Mayor, you know, Governor Malloy says, you know, we don't know the details yet, but our hearts go out to the family. He did start out saying our hearts go out to the family, but he felt there was a need to make the statement quickly about how he's been frustrated because since the Sandy Hook massacre, Chris Murphy has been at the forefront of gun control legislation. And I know that you have spoken about this continually, and during the presidential campaign, this was one of your big issues. Are you feeling the way Chris Murphy's doing, that we need to, at the moments of this tragedy, to try to focus the attention? And given how many, have we become numb? I didn't even realize we've had one a day. Have we become numb that is there going to be political will to tackle it?
I mean, I think that we have seen for, many decades now, we've been talking about this and nothing has happened in Washington. You've seen a lot happen at the state level, a spattering of things, but certainly at our state level, we have some of the strongest gun control legislation in the country. And yet, when you think about Connecticut and how close it is to New York, how close it is to Rhode Island, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, you recognize, and really, if you think about how close we are to New Jersey and other places, and how people come here to Connecticut from all over the East Coast, both north and south, and the federal laws that would prohibit people buying in other states and bringing guns here just don't exist. And there are just so many simple little things that could be done that could restrict the amount of guns in people's hands and the kind of guns, the kind of people that can have guns. Obviously, someone that goes in and shoots almost 500 people, kills over 50, is not balanced. And so you think about Nevada and other states, particularly southern states, that have these open carry laws, don't have any real, you don't have to be licensed to carry at all. It's really frightening because we also haven't done well with mental health in our country. And it's and it's clearly the whole idea of the right to bear arms probably didn't take into consideration the fact that there are some people who bear arms who may not be balanced. And so we see these things happen time and time and time again. I understand that he had 10 rifles in his room.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's gotten ridiculous. Aren't there more guns than people at this point?
There must be. And, you know, why would we protect this industry that ultimately randomly kills us?
So why do we?
Obviously at the federal level, it appears to be the relationships and the money that the lobbyists on behalf of these gun manufacturing companies have. You know, we call it the NRA, but it's beyond that. It's not just the money, but it's also the relationships.
And you think about ammunition. Some people have talked about ammunition control rather than gun control. This guy must have had a lot of ammo to shoot 500 people.
Okay. He had. Yeah, he had to. Not only did he have the guns, but he had the ammo too. And the other thing that we know in Europe, that there are technical advances that would say that if you have the right to carry, that you can have guns now that are manufactured that would only allow you to shoot them. So that, and that would help somewhat.
But are we going around the edges here? We're not really dealing with the root of it, right? Maybe we can't because of the politics in our country.
The root of it is that the people are not mature enough, unless we have a system in place, that assures maturity to handle arms. And so we do everything that we can. We make sure that we test in almost every building except ours. That you can't carry a weapon inside of that building. You can't go to a state building. You can't go to a federal building with any weapons. And a lot of places that try to get into a Lexion at all, let alone with weapons, and you certainly would not be able to do that.
Now, you're the president of the African American Mayors Association. Have you been hearing this much among your colleagues in other cities? Are they saying that this is got to be at the top of agenda? Have you discussed how to deal with that issue?
Well, you know, one of the things that we do talk about, and it's related, is urban violence. And so, yes, there is a group that is on our business council that supports changing our gun laws and making sure that guns don't get into the hands of kids, which really is a problem in urban areas. And we've seen it here in our own town.
I wonder if we're going to hear about that next week. You're hosting in New Haven a national conference of members of the African American Mayors Association at the Omni. There's going to be two sessions, if I remember correctly. One is women mayors.
Right.
And then there's going to be, the whole group is going to be there, and then you're going to have a national parlay at the Omni. And I think, is that the 12th to the 14th?
No, it's the 18th through the 20th.
Oh, the 18th to the 20th. Sorry, I had those weeks wrong. Okay, and that's at the Omni. That's going to be a big deal.
Yeah, I think it should be a big deal. We're hoping that number of mayors from across the country come and we can discuss these issues.
But the most important part, of course, being a Jewish person, I ask this, where are you going to eat? You know, Jackie Macy routine, the wasps go and how is the event? Where are you going to drink? How's the event? Jewish people say, what do you eat? The food was no good. The portion's too small. You know, where are you going to take them to eat?
We're well, I know we're going to eat at the Omni, and there are a number of other places that we're going to eat. I haven't really looked to tell you the truth, but
so it's hard to decide.
It is hard,
and my wife and I got to eat. It's like, there's so many good places there. That's kind of hard to decide which one to go to.
And you know, once they've come to New Haven, once they drink our water and once they've eaten our food, they will be sure to come back.
All right. Well, I'm glad you came back to listen to Mayor Monday. Out on WNHH Radio, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenevent.org. We have Mayor Tony Harp for her checkup thing. We already got a question in on Facebook we're going to get to. You can keep up if you go to our Facebook Live page, and also you can call in 203-8727-ELM, 203-872-7356. Moving on with your daily briefing, Mayor Harp, from the news. I want to read you, I don't know if you noticed the letters in the editor yesterday of the New York Times opinion section.
No, I didn't. I'm sorry.
You don't have to apologize. That's why you get a briefing. I picked out, so you don't have to go through all of them, three of my favorite letters that day. And they were all on the subject of where Amazon should build its new headquarters. Amazon is building a new 8.1 million square foot headquarters that it says will hire 50,000 people. Mm. So New York Times talked about how just about every city and its brother is working hard to try to get them here with humor, war rooms, all sorts of stuff. So here's one letter. If I were a prospective employee of Amazon, I would like nothing better than to work in New Haven, Connecticut.
Yay.
New Haven has a strong cultural presence with theaters, museums, concert venues, and an annual arts festival. Yale University anchors the lively downtown full of bookstores, cafes, restaurants, and pubs. The city has its own small airport and its convenient drive to Hartford's International Airport. Amtrak stops in New Haven. Metro North trains connect to Manhattan. Connecticut, a progressive state with an open-minded, welcome population, is a delightful place to live and raise a family, writes Anne Marie Sutton of Milford.
Oh, my goodness.
And Connecticut hasn't gotten that kind of reputation these days in the news, but oh, Anne Marie. But Nancy Anderson of Seattle wrote, I'm a longtime Seattle resident. My advice to cities vying for Amazon is to be careful what you wish for. The average tenure at Amazon is about 1 year. The resultant influx of transient, well-paid workers that has turned Seattle into a city of horrendous traffic and outrageously expensive housing that has lost its quirky middle-class character. Thanks to Amazon's rampant development without accompanying transportation infrastructure, it is now an ordeal to cross town at 8 hours of the day. The city is now unaffordable for young families, and the flight to the suburbs is accelerating. Cities should consider exactly who will benefit from these high-paying jobs at Amazon. Nancy Anderson of Seattle is not a big fan. And then my favorite letter was from Martha Shelley of Portland, Oregon. As a book author, I've had ongoing headaches with Amazon. I propose that Amazon put its new headquarters in the South Pole Aitken Basin on the dark side of the moon. It is very spacious, 1,600 miles in diameter, so big it could be shared with Walmart. Perhaps if we can remove those companies from the face of the earth, we can get our nice little bookstores and other retail outlets back. This will improve our local economies and hopefully provide decent paying jobs for our neighbors. Martha Shelley, I would quibble with some of her analysis. I actually think that little bookstores are actually doing great right now. And there's been a whole shakeup in retail. Then Amazon, definitely there are antitrust issues, but I don't think it's that simple. But I love the dark side of the moon. So of those three letters, Mayor Harp, which one do you agree with?
Well, you know, I actually agree with number one and probably number two as well.
Oh, that's very interesting.
And from a
Sarah too sounded kind of sour grapes to me.
Well, you know, in a way, but, you know, like, I think that her point was that you really have got to think about your overall transportation infrastructure and whether or not it can accommodate all of those people and all of that constant transition. That's what it sounded like to me.
That's true. Anytime you have a big new employer, you got to deal with it.
And that's why I think New Haven is a perfect place, because we are right because we have a hard rail. We're walkable, so that, you know, you don't really, if you live in New Haven and downtown, you can walk to work, you can ride your bicycle, you don't really need to depend upon a car. And so I think that really helps this area a little bit more than any other area probably in our state. I would think that if it goes to Stamford or to the Hartford, East Hartford area, that it would create congestion. Here, it probably wouldn't, because we have actually gone into this whole thing called complete streets, and we have a lot more housing downtown, and we have a number of towns on the rail line. And so I like our proposal that begins to think of New Haven and Bridgeport,
And I do want to get to that. I've heard you say before, Mary Harp, because you travel so much more than I do, that in New Haven, it's not like we shouldn't fix the streets to make them go more smoothly, but we consider a traffic jam two changes of a traffic light at rush hour, which is a 20-minute rush hour.
Right.
And actually, I felt that way last week. I was cracking up. My wife and I, she was picking me up. We were on Goff Street down by Sherman, and it was like, right exactly, you know, 5:15. And the light changed, and then it changed again. I said, that's broken. This is your traffic jam. And I was cracking up. I was saying, Tony Harp says she goes to Atlanta. It takes like 2 hours to get down the block. You guys don't know traffic. Do you want a city? You don't want a city. Okay, so to backstep a little bit, you have joined forces with Bridgeport.
Yeah.
And this is interesting, because on our own, we couldn't get, and Bob is calling. Bob, we're going to get to your question in a minute. Thanks for, Bob, thanks for calling. You have made a proposal with Joe Ganim, the mayor of Bridgeport, and you are joining forces because New Haven alone couldn't get this Amazon facility because they needed 8.1 million square feet contiguous, and we found 4 million square feet contiguous in a very interesting area. We've actually been waiting for this day. We filled in the Route 34 connector, and we have land around it. coming out from Alexion. There already had been talk, unofficially, I believe, of a second tower there. So your idea is, why not combine with Bridgeport? In other parts of the country, suburbs here are really neighborhoods and cities. In Seattle, they have all sorts of 30 buildings that go for miles, and that's still in the city of Seattle's city limits. Whereas in Connecticut, we have all these little towns, their own municipality. But in fact, let's think of Bridgeport, New Haven as one place and have 4 million square feet here, 4 million square there. Connecticut did not like your idea.
No, they
Connecticut
didn't like
is picking one city to try to push. I think that's what you're
reckon.
Two. Who are they picking?
Oh, I mentioned them already.
Oh, East Hartford and?
Well, Hartford, East Hartford, and Stamford.
See, now, like, I would rather die than live in those places. I'll just be honest, okay? So, I mean, there's no way Amazon is going to those places.
That's okay.
I mean, to live there, I mean, check your soul at the door. What's the point of being a human being? But, I mean, still, it's a huge climb. You are asking them to think creatively, right?
Yeah.
Most people think this is an incredible long shot. It isn't for any city. Because, you know, Detroit, they got miles and miles and miles of just land they weren't even going to build on anymore. Cleveland, they're near an airport. They have bigger metropolitan areas with workers. What's going to sell us? Because you're going to keep going, right? You and Joe Ganim are going to keep going
this. We're going to keep
going. Even though Connecticut's going to go with boring East Hartford.
And Stamford.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that even exists. Yeah.
And, you know, and honestly, they are going to do what number two was concerned about. Both of those locations. Just saying. But at any rate, we think that we have a vibrant metro area between the two towns. It's over 1 million people, and
1.8 or 9,
right? And that we think, look, you know, if this were Houston, Texas, the whole state would be a city.
Yeah.
And you know, I was in almost everywhere that I've gone, the area between Bridgeport and New Haven have been cities: St. Louis, Indianapolis. If you go to Dallas, you know, all those big cities, Atlanta, Chicago. You name it, and the area between Bridgeport and New Haven would be in one city. And so we think that we're onto something here, and that that what we've got to do, if the state won't set up mechanisms for us to have jurisdictions, then we can ourselves collaborate. And so that's what we're doing. We're going to try to meet with the state and see if we can get them. If you're going more than one place, which they are, they're going to two, why not three?
And why do you need the state? Is Amazon saying you have to go through the state?
Well, we want the state to give us the give our proposal the same tax break.
I can't imagine Jeff Bezos cares about formal government for protocol where he wants to put a place.
I know, but they want givebacks from around taxes and those sort of things, and those come from the state.
Oh, so if you don't have the state behind you, and there's a tough budget time, so this is going to be a hard sell, Mayor Harp.
It's going to be a hard sell. They're not, you know, we're kind of, but we feel like nothing beats a failure but a try.
All right. Ooh, I like that. And you know what? We just opened some interesting discussion about New Haven and Bridgeport and being a region. But first, I want to get to some of our listeners. Bob, are you still there?
Yes, I am, Paul.
You know, Bob, are you still in the infirmary? Last week you called from the infirmary.
No, I'm actually at home resting.
Hey, how you feeling, man?
Much better. Thank
you. You don't sound the usual energetic sight.
Yeah, come on. Let's get some energy there. We're not going to believe you feel better unless you just tone up that voice a little bit.
Yeah, I know I have to. But my question is for you this morning. If you're elected mayor, do you plan on making any changes in your administration or departments or whatever?
You know, one of the things that I will do is once I'm elected, I'll take a look at what's working and what isn't and see how we can fine-tune it. And so stay tuned.
I thought the point is when you're running for office, you're supposed to make unnecessary enemies by targeting individuals before you win again.
I know. That's what you're supposed to do, right?
See, he's totally surprising with that answer. So, Bob, any other questions?
Yeah, I do. I do have one more question, Paul. And it's a 360 turn for me. And I'm watching the coverage of the mass shooting in Vegas, in Las Vegas. But is New Haven prepared, Mayor, the city, the police, the hospitals, if this were to ever happen in New Haven?
What a great question, Bob. You ask really good questions, my friend.
No, that's a good one. And I would say that we are prepared, but it would be difficult. And one of the things that makes me know that we are prepared is the way in which we operated when we had that instance of domestic violence.
Almost two Saturdays ago on Elm Street.
And the thing that is really great about New Haven, we have the New Haven police, we have the Yale police, we have the state police who we can call in, and then we have all of our neighboring police forces. We meet with them every day except Thursday to do a local, by local I mean regional comm stat, so that we, because again, we are geographically small. Why does this always come up at every?
Is it like 18.7 square miles?
Something like that, right?
Still, that never changes.
It doesn't change. And so,
or the glaciers, they changed East Rock, West Rock at some point, that 18.7.
It may change, yes, a few eons from now. But so we basically collaborate with them every day throughout the week except Thursday. And I believe that should anything happen because of the ongoing collaborations that exist, that we would be able to deal with it. Now, I don't want to have to deal with that. And I think that one of the things that makes Connecticut somewhat safer is that we have stronger gun laws. And so it's my hope that something like that not happen here. But if it does, I believe that we would be prepared.
Well, as Chris Murphy points
okay.
out, a mass
shooting. Do you
talk to
the federal government if there could be possibly a member of ISIS in the city?
We are always in touch with the federal government as well, and they would let us know. So far, I haven't heard from our police chief that we've gotten any notice from ISIS that there's some dangerous
And actually, most
here.
Of these mass shootings have nothing to do with ISIS. Most of them are domestic. Is this one's looking right? I
mean, yeah, you don't know for sure. Yeah, this guy's an American.
But you know, that did strike me when Murphy reminded us this morning, Chris Murphy, in his statement. It's something we've heard before, and then I forget. That pretty much every day some kind of crazy mass shooting happens in this country. So, of course, it can happen here. So,
of course. And, you know, and we don't want it to happen. Look, one of the problems that we have, and it was brought to my attention year after year by the Keep the Promise work that is being done in our state, that we haven't as a state, as a healthcare delivery system, really done the work that we need to do to assure that everyone who has a mental illness gets the kind of care and support that they need to get to live in our communities.
Now it's coming back to me. You chaired at the state legislature a mental health task force in the response to the Sandy Hook shooting before you became mayor. Now it's come back to me, right?
I mean,
you guys worked on that. So you did make some progress on that.
We did make some progress. And one of the things that we're doing as a city is that we're doing mental health first aid so that if we can identify that someone is decompensating or has an issue, that we're teaching people in the communities how to make referrals and what to do in that case. But, you know, and we make progress slowly, but we're doing that kind of work.
Bob, thanks so much for the questions. And Bob, we hope that you're on the mend so that next week, not only are you still out of the infirmary, but that you're your effervescent self.
Feel Thank better, you. Bob.
Right. And we're feeling better because we're on Dateline New Haven. It's Mayor Monday with Mayor Tony Harp at 103.5 FM live stream to newhavenadvent.org. We will get to Facebook Live questions. Keep them coming. Or you can call 203-8727-ELM, 203-872-7356. But I want to continue this Bridgeport talk because in the last few weeks, I'm getting the sense that I never used to hear about this, about New Haven and Bridgeport sort of having common interest, working together. I mean, we were on different planets, you know? We don't even think of the cities in the same breath. But it was just 2 weeks ago, you were at a press conference in Bridgeport where they want to build a new casino. Bobby Proto was there, too, from the United Here Union. They have a longstanding relationship with the casino industry. He says they have a great record, in his opinion, of getting union jobs and decent work for people. And you joined Mayor Ganim in saying we would like MGM to build a casino there. And they said, we're going to do a training facility in New Haven. We're going to guarantee a certain number of jobs from the city. Had you seen that in your last, I guess, 28 years in public life, I remember it's 25, have you seen that before where New Haven and Bridgeport were standing together, specifically just New Haven and Bridgeport?
No, I don't think that we...
I mean, they're fearful county.
No, I don't think that we've seen it previously with, you know, you occasionally you might see it, but in all honesty, you haven't seen New Haven and Bridgeport working together. And I think that as more and more of these proposals come up and they need a, they're looking for a place where there are more people, we begin to look at our neighbors to say, who can we work with?
Now, it's one part that might be a little unrealistic is that even though, as you very well pointed out, well, the point well taken that other parts of the country, Bridgeport and New Haven might even be the same city, you know, whether it's Houston or, or West Coast, it's still a 21-mile ride from New Haven to Bridgeport. So for starters, we'd have to get some honest mass transit. Maybe your economic development administrator, Matt Emerson, talked about having some kind of direct bus shuttle between the two.
Yep.
Is that close enough to work as a campus?
I think it's close enough to work as a campus, especially. Let's look. I haven't looked at what they're doing in Seattle, but I think that it spans
30
beyond,
buildings. Yeah,
yeah, beyond 20 miles, and so, so yes, and the fact that we do have rail, and to get to both places, I think that makes us unique.
Well, once the sun goes down, the buses are all going to be coming up this way. Because I mean, if you want to do anything after dark, you're in New Haven, right? Yeah.
That's right. No matter where you are.
Unless there might be a casino there, right? So all the people want to lose their money, you'll go that way. And all the people who want to have some fun will come this way.
That's right.
The Virginia Kozlowski runs the Economic Development Corporation as a quasi-public business promotion and development arm for the region. And she's been very involved in these talks between the two cities. And she said, I said to her, you know, isn't this like a really long shot? She said, you know, it is. And she said what you said, it's worth trying. But she thinks something positive has come out of it already. She said whether or not Amazon comes, that the idea that we've for the first time begun to think of ourselves as one region that way, not as a whole state and not as a whole city in New Haven and its towns, but Bridgeport, New Haven, you had the two kind of chamber type people and business promotion groups coming together. You had the two governments working together. And she feels this could be the start of an ability to respond to other possibilities of people locating businesses here.
No, I think that's absolutely the case. The other thing that we started doing on our own is going to Hanover, Mass, to the International Business Fair, trying to get businesses to come to New Haven region, to our SCROG region. And
South Central Connecticut Region of Governments.
Right, right. And so now we've thought, well, oh, well, why don't we, if they want a bigger area, why don't we go with the Bridgeport area, with their Metro COG or whatever it's called, and take our whole area over to Hanover and sell it to the companies that are over there. And
is that going to happen?
Yeah, I think it's going to happen. We're talking about doing that for, I believe those trade shows are in the spring.
So this is real. It's happening.
It's happening.
Now, how about the relationship with you and Joe Gann? Was that because it started with personal chemistry or?
Well, I mean, I've never had a problem with Joe Gannon. We always worked together on, quote, urban policy issues when I was in the state Senate. And he was the mayor, you know, back in that day. And he seems to be easy to work with. And so am I.
Are you looking for him to be the governor? He's running for governor.
I know that he is running for governor. I don't know if he will be or not. Right now, he's the mayor, and I want to collaborate with him as mayor.
So do we call it Bridgehaven or New Bridgehavenport?
Oh, I don't know. That's interesting.
We had a little postcard work donating to your cause. It's called, it was on the front page of the Independent last week. Welcome to Bridgehaven, home of Amazon, too. Because New Bridgehaven Port is kind of long.
But New Bridgeport might not be.
That's not bad.
That's not bad.
You know, the other thing, that happened a few months ago is the Connecticut Post, which is the old Bridgeport Post.
Uh-huh.
It bought the Register.
Yep.
And in fact, they are combined in a big way, too. And I'll leave aside questions of, you know, what makes the best journalism or not. They're combining forces. They have a very strong Capital Bureau at the Connecticut Post. That is now the New Haven Register's Bureau. If you go to their two websites, they look identical now, even though some of the copy's different. A lot of the information is shared. And I'm just wondering if that's going to work as an identity. This is sort of the first test of a regional identity, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're basically taking on the current for control of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Connecticut Post is owned by Hearst Media, which owns the Stamford paper, the Norwalk paper. I think they own Danbury. Granted, so they're trying to get that half of the state, and then the Current owns the top part of the state. And I think that you are seeing that kind of regionalism happening organically.
And, you know, the other thing, I spoke to Mayor Martin of Stamford, who will even go deeper and farther, you know, not with these individual projects, But he believes, as I do, that we need to look at I-95 up to New Haven as a region. And when you think about it, we're part of the Regional Plan Association thinks of us as a region and connected to New York. And we haven't done enough of that, I don't think. And so to the degree that all of the major mayors along I-95, maybe all the way up to Brantford, if not to Guilford and Madison, begin to think about this corridor and what we could do together, I think that we could help really rebuild the state.
Well, whatever happens with Amazon, and are those drones out the window? Oh, no, wait, Amazon's not here. Whatever happens with Amazon, I wish.
Remember the Jetsons, and remember how they had these little things flying in with packages?
It's happening.
It's happening. Can you imagine that? I used to think, oh, that's way out there. Even as a kid, I thought, oh, that'll never happen.
And then they had Rosie, who was the maid. Uh-huh. But now you have this flat AI robot.
Yeah, the robo vacuum cleaner.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. That kind of freaks me out. We have one. I get kind of scared. I run out of the room. Last night I had to put something in my daughter's from her bedroom, and there was the thing going around, and I thought it was like following me and like taking information. It was going to track me. Was it going to make me do something? And I like bolted out of the room and shut the door. But yeah, it's like we are getting to be the Jetsons.
Yeah, we are.
But anyway, whatever happens with Amazon, good luck with this building a regional identity. This is new and this is interesting.
I think it is, and I think there's a lot of potential there.
All right. And you're potentially and in reality listening to the human version of Dateline New Haven Mayor Monday, WNHH Radio 103.5 FM and live stream newhavenmp.org. Mayor Tony Harp is in the house. Mayor Harp, we got a Facebook Live question from Tom. Good morning, Mayor. A few questions. It's the beginning of October. Still no state budget. What happens now? Will the city have to lay off workers or levy new taxes? Good question. Thank you, Tom.
Right now, we're not looking at levying new taxes. And right now, we're not looking at laying off, but we're not going to be hiring. We're slowing down our contracting process, and we'll likely not be doing a lot of new contracting because we don't have a state budget. And we're worried that the fact that we don't, and it impacts us, it impacts Hartford, it impacts our major cities in our state, because so many of us are dependent upon state funds for our revenue, a large portion of our revenue, that we're worried that we're going to be downgraded. I spoke to my...
As a state or a city or both? Are you talking about bond rating agencies?
Bond rating agencies.
And that makes it cost more money to borrow money.
To borrow. And, you know, Hartford's already been downgraded several times.
Hartford's going bankrupt.
Well, it is, but we thought that we were a little bit more stable than that, but now there's some reason to worry that the rating agencies are going to hold us accountable somehow.
In other words, they're going to say, because of what's happening at the state, you're not going to have enough money to pay your bills, so our bond's going to... Is that happening soon?
I hope not.
Have you gotten word of this?
We've
been warned?
We've been warned.
So what do you do then? You have your people meet with them to try to convince them that's not...
They've been trying to convince them that at least that it's not so, and that we think that they're taking unfair advantage of a situation that they know will be resolved at some point.
Well, who's they? How are the bond rating advantage take advantage? Isn't their job just to try to
analyze? You know, yeah, but they don't all do it the same way. And there are certain houses that do that are a little less, how can I put it, supportive and see us, and are more likely to see something in a negative light than others.
Gotcha. So like from our point of view, it feels like punishment, and we have to do the job that you are doing, which is sit with them and make them see our finances in a better light, because it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If they downgrade it, it costs us more to borrow money than our... But from their point of view, and I know this isn't the way it works in the real world, but theoretically, from their point of view, they shouldn't be supportive or not supportive. They should analyze for bondholders the risks available based on how they see the situation. So even though it's not at all New Haven's fault that they can't pass a state budget,
doesn't mean that we won't pay. And I think that you've got to look at...
Give it our track record.
Right. And you've got to look at our track record, and they're not looking at that.
So we've balanced
the
budget. You basically tell me we've balanced the budgets years in a row.
Right.
We've gotten upgrades in our bond rating. We've paid the bills. So why are you assuming we won't?
Right. That's basically the question that we're asking.
Good luck on that one. Now, there were two different deadlines, I believe, October and November, and we were more worried about the November deadline, whereas towns throughout the state were more worried about October. And if I'm not mistaken, that's because what happened in October was Governor Malloy takes over the distribution of education money,
right,
and that he was keeping us at the same levels last year, whereas a lot of cities and towns were defunded or partially defunded. So that's why October mattered to the rest of the state, whereas for us, November is the big date, correct?
Well, we've been looking at November because we were thinking that unless the controller can come up with some magic, that we will have a bit of a cash problem in November. He's looking at that now. We may be able to hold off to December, January.
And is that because there's money that's not part of the educational cost-sharing formula, that education money, again, that today was an important day for, October 1st, yesterday? Are there other forms of state aid that until there's a budget we can't get?
Absolutely.
And is that what's creating the potential cash flow crisis?
Sure. We get payment in lieu of taxes or the pilots for colleges, hospitals, state property, as well as for affordable housing, and we can't get those pilots because those are those pilot payments.
The governor can't distribute those. That
he
has to be the legislature.
Because it's based upon within available appropriations, and if there are no appropriations, he can't.
But he can give school aid.
That's because it's a formula based and not on...
So the legislature's already passed that, and that continues year to year unless they change it?
Yeah, it's sort of built into the overall general statutes, whereas the other is...
So how much is at stake in that money that we wouldn't get by November 1st without a budget?
I think that from a year perspective, it's a little over, it's around $75 million.
And how much would come in November?
I think they're going to do the, I don't know the exact number, to be honest with you, but I think it's one-fourth of our normal educational cost-sharing payment. I think it's around $20 million or something, $22 million.
But we weren't talking about educational sharing here. I thought we were talking about pilot.
Oh, yeah, we were, but we're not getting any of that, so we're getting nothing.
Right, so in October, we're getting cost sharing for education, but you're saying in November, if we don't get the pilot money, that's what causes the cash
that price. Yes, and that's about a third, and so that would
$25 million?
About $25 million. And, the other thing is educational cost sharing isn't the only educational dollars that we get. We get dollars for magnet schools, which we won't get. We get priority school district dollars as well, which we won't get, so that it's about $75 million with our pilots, and then multiple millions of these other dollars, probably around $30 million more.
So over $100 million for the year.
Yeah.
And you're saying in November would be a third of that total?
A third of that total, yeah.
So we're out $33 million on November 1st, unless they pass a budget.
Yeah.
How's it looking?
Well, I thought they would do one in September. I'm forever
an optimist.
Well,
you think Amazon's coming, so you do think positive.
I think that as more and more towns that are not our major urban towns like us, they always think that we're crying mayors, to be honest with you, in the major urban areas because we are dependent. But there are other areas that, like our newcomers to sort of saying, look, even though it's not as much of a factor as it would be for Hartford or New Haven, it's still a factor. And legislators who support us, our delegations, you've got to do something.
What do you think they're going to do up there? And what's up? We're the only state now in the country without a budget.
I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping that they sit in a room and they hammer it out.
And boy, does this really take next year's state elections into focus. We are deadlocked, Republican, Democratic. It feels to me like we're moving toward a red state
It feels that way. At least that's what this budget impasse represents.
And those Democrats who voted for the Republican budget, any thoughts on that?
I've never seen anything like
Lonnie
that before.
Lonnie Raitt, Gail Schlossberg.
Never seen anything like that before.
Well, do you think that makes, does that make the urban-suburban divide more important than the Democratic-Republican divide? Like, basically, they helped reallocate monies from poor to rich, just like last year that made that judge so upset about education funding.
Right.
They decided that we're going to take money out of poorer school systems, give it to wealthier towns. They decided we're not going to raise revenue or tax wealthy people. We're just going to cut. So what is
that? And, you know, they have the majority in the legislature, the suburban towns.
They always have.
And they now have more. The thing about Democrats, we're a big tent. We have very liberal folks and we have very conservative folks. And as the numbers of Democrats reduce in both houses, then those who are conservative have more power than they've ever had. And that's a problem.
I want to give you another question from Tom. Is the city still exploring the law enforcement assisted diversion LEAD program for deflecting low-level drug offenders from the criminal justice system? If so, what's the latest?
Yes, we are still doing that. Dr. Martha Okafor is working on that with our state's attorney. The area that we'll do a pilot in is the Hill neighborhood. The services will be provided by the Cornell Scott Hill Health Center, the drug treatment services, and they're in the process of identifying staff, of making sure that there are enough resources in place to move it forward. But my understanding is we got some good news from Dr. Okafor indicating that the case management vehicle that we needed would be funded through staff who work here and are funded by Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. So that we are moving forward. It just takes a little bit of time. I think we'll be able to, I'm hoping, announce the implementation period. We're in the planning period right now within the next month.
All right. So you're still doing other business besides hoping that the ship of the state doesn't sink into the Hartford, Connecticut River.
Absolutely hoping that that doesn't happen.
So the chain say, hey, Amazon, come to Hartford. But meanwhile, we're going to just sink the whole state there in the river. Okay.
Yeah.
The this Saturday, you were at Front Street Park, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I saw your picture.
Yep.
And there was a big rally for Puerto Rico, raise money for the horrible devastation, the hurricane there. I guess there's no such thing as good devastation. The devastation of the hurricane, all the people dying there, and they think the agricultural economy may not ever be rebuilt. $60,000 so far, $60,000 the city has raised for Puerto Rico, along with Juan Candelari and some of the organizations like the Junta and Arte.
It's Arte Inc., the New Haven Puerto Rican Festival Association, and we got a lot of help from the fire department, but specifically the Hispanic firefighters and the police department, and specifically the Latino police officers. And the city of New Haven was very helpful. The New Haven Public Schools stepped up to the plate. There was a game at Hill House that made $5,000, which was significant. And
speaking of the schools, we were expecting people to come from Puerto Rico. How many kids are we looking at?
Well, we don't know the number, but what we do know is that there are a number of people here who have family members who are in Puerto Rico. Our expectation is that given the devastation, when flights can get out and families can help their family members come to the mainland, to the United States, that a number of those families are going to come to Connecticut and specifically to New Haven to live with family members until things get straightened out on the island.
10, 100, 1,000, 10,000?
We don't know. And so what we've done is to look at the numbers across grade in all of our schools to see where we have open spaces. And then once we fill all of those open spaces, we're going to have a swing space over on the boulevard in what used to be the Early Learning Center over there. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we're preparing to make sure that as these young people come in, that we will be able to get them right into school.
Well, good job, New Haven and Puerto Rico. Norma Rodriguez-Reyes, Publisher La Voz, she was in here on Friday, Pundit. She was saying that what's different if we really do have immigration, if our Puerto Rican population grows in New Haven again, which used to be the basis of Latino population, then we had waves of Latin American immigration of people who didn't become citizens, at least for a long time. So they didn't really change the politics of the city. She thinks there are going to be a lot of Puerto Rican professionals who come to live here and that they will be instantly, because they're American citizens, they're going to be able to vote. And do you think that's going to change how politics works in the city?
Well, I think that it will, because they, Puerto Ricans, everybody doesn't recognize that they're American citizens. That if it were not for some unfortunate votes, both on the island as well as, I guess, I don't know if Congress has ever taken it up, but they're very much like Hawaii. They could have become a state, and it probably would have been better given this if they had been. And so, yes, they can come here into our entire state, and they're going to impact the politics, not just of New Haven, but our entire state as they come and they move in and they become politically active.
Speaking of climate change and flooding, FEMA here gave you a perfect score of 7 of flood preparation in the city. So you were out at the seawall last week, and that means money in the bank, right? Because people's flood insurance goes down if FEMA says we're better prepared.
That's right. They think that there'll be about a 15% reduction in the cost of your required flood insurance.
So if our taxes go up $100, you're going to have torch parades on City Hall. But if your flood control, if your flood insurance goes down $500, no one bats a wing.
Well, no. And, you know, the other thing that we want to tell people is you've got to contact your mortgage company that buys your insurance to make sure that you're getting that savings. And you can call our city plan department and they'll give you more information if you don't exactly know how to do it. And then we're going to try to have some folks in the mayor's office who'll be aware of how you do that as well. But some people, this happened about 3 months ago, the reduction, and some people have already paid. And so we've got to help our neighbors figure out how they get that savings.
All right. And I just doing a little editorial comment there about how we talk about taxes, but that's something there.
No, I think you were absolutely right. Nobody says a word, right?
Like I used to feel like when the state had these debates, I felt like, you know, if 100,000 families aren't going to starve, you're not going to have to close a school. I don't mind paying $150 in taxes next month, you know, next year, but that's another discussion. That's crazy liberalism. But Robert Gibson writes in, New Haven has spent nearly $30,000 on a firm to do a national search for superintendent. The firm recommended 6 finalists. Now the Board of Ed has shifted to consider local candidates who are not recommended by the search firm. If the Board of Ed now wants to seriously consider local candidates, which the firm did not consider, was $30,000 of taxpayer funds wasted? And will we settle for less than the best available national candidate?
You know, one of the things, Mr. Gibson, and maybe he's seen everyone who's applied, including our local applicants, to determine whether or not, in fact, they were the best. We have no real way of knowing. One of the things that the search firm was supposed to do was to before selecting the 6, they were supposed to go around to various communities in our city to find out what people wanted. They talked to 41 people. They really didn't talk to parents, teachers, just people in the community. Everybody helps to pay for our school system here. And so how did they select the 6? I think that's the thing that we are asking. And then how do they relate to the other 45 or 40 that are in the pool? And how do they relate to the New Haven folks that or Connecticut folks that applied? And we don't know that. And I think that's the problem. The real problem is communication. And it's unfortunate, but, you know, like, maybe the $30,000 should have been monitored a little bit better with the search committee. But of course, you know, the search committee was not allowed to participate. So this is why you have questions. And it's our responsibility as a board to ask those questions and to be made to make sure that we haven't been sold a bill of goods.
Planned Parenthood, you have an appearance at a fair this week.
That was great. They were out on Whitney Avenue, and they were giving free blood screenings, as well as you could get your blood pressure checked and information about sexually transmitted diseases and other kinds of reproductive health issues. And so that was great. And I think the work that they do in bringing young women into the healthcare delivery system is really important.
And the next time we're racing the Amazon drones from the Jetsons down Long Wharf, we're going to be able to stop at the reopened snack shop with Braz, the guy who runs Brazzi is running that.
Yep.
And Rue's going to have a new gelato flavor made in New Haven, named after New Haven.
Isn't that great? And the gelato evidently is really great, but you know, I don't eat sugar. So I just had to look at it, but people were really enjoying it.
And do you have sugar in your kombucha though?
Well, I do, but you know, like it changes forms because the scooby eats it up and grows.
I love those scobies.
Scobies, that's right.
And how are yours doing?
Mine are growing, but I haven't had as much time to make kombucha because of the election. But,
I can't fit it all in my fridge anymore.
I know, because they keep growing and you keep getting
more. It's so
much
fun. I feel like it's the ultimate bargain.
Yeah.
Just get a new scoby every week or two. All of a sudden, for the same amount of money, you can make bottles more that cost $8 million at the store.
That's right.
So now that we've done some high finance, city finances, kombucha finances, we're gonna bid goodbye for this week.
All right.
It's a pleasure as always, Mayor Harp. Thanks so much for coming in for Mayor Monday. It's a great way to start our week.
All right. Thank you very much, too.
Thank you, listeners, for sending in your questions. Thanks to Bertram Moses PC and Gateway Community College for providing financial support. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free from the CD A Plea for Peace. Now, this Paul Bass reminding us that we do know what it feels like to be free. We just have to book our flight. Book your flight and fly free with us all day and all night long at WNHH New Haven's home for community radio.